This is the second side of a tape done with Edwin Herlash in Algoma, Wisconsin. The subject is commercial fishing among the Belgians.
In the summertime, we use fish boxes and net boxes, and they were all built in a flare this way, see, ends and all. So whenever we set our nets, we had all the leads on one side and the corks on the other. But see, like my granddad, well, they never fished with a boat. But us, we did, and we take the line off on the end that's in here, mm-hmm. And we take that off, and there was only about this much open between each.
What's see? That, 2 feet?
Hmm?
Is that about 2 feet?
Yeah, about 2 feet or better, a little bit, mm-hmm. On each end, and they were tied, just put in, tied together. And they'd set them that way. But then when we'd lift them, we'd pull them back in the box the same way, no matter if they were big mesh or small mesh. But when we came back to the shore, we had a great big vat, wide enough so the boxes would fit in, the fire under, and put the whole thing in, so you work it. And then we had reels. Made out of wood, maybe, oh, I'd say 8 feet, 7 to 8 feet in diameter. It's only about four pieces, see? And some in the center of the hull. And they were put on posts, and we'd reel them. And that's the way we'd dry them. We'd run them on there and clean them. A lot of times there was moss, or there was sometimes if it happened to be in a big storm for a long time, we had a lot of dead fish. There was always something you had to shake out, you know, leaves and different things. And then they'd dry. When they were dry, we'd pull them back in the box again. So it always took two gangs to keep you going. See, you'd had one fishing, you had one home. After you got the fish out, your fish dressed, then you had to take care of your twine. So it was an all day's job. Because if you had herring or whitefish and trout, you had to dress them. Perch, we never dressed a perch.
How did you dress them?
Oh, we just mostly used a board with a 2x4 on, like for herring and that stuff. Then you got a chance to hold your fish, and you never get your hand into the fish guts. See? You just slaughter them this way and do this, and all there was is the gills left in them. They were pretty near as clean as they could be.
What did you do with the guts?
The guts, the seagulls ate the biggest part of them. If we was on the boat coming back, we'd throw everything overboard, and them seagulls would pick everything. Even the minnows and the other ones that come in after the bloaters, just to do what they call bloaters, is a little, kind of a little white bag they got in there, and they keep bobbing on the water, and they keep picking at it till they punch it, and they eat it up. Today, they haul it to dump, which I don't think is fair. Our seagulls are starving. They're on land trying to get angleworms now.
Did you ever use any for fertilizer?
Oh, yes. You know, we get some right around my trees right now out here. Every time I dress fish, that's where they go.
For the farm, though, did you do that?
No. Farm, we never saved them up there much. But that was quite a job to haul it. And, you know, you didn't ask, you put it too heavy, you burn it. That's awful strong stuff. But seagulls, oh, God, it. We had barrels on the dock, and if the barrel was half full, the seagulls would come in and get it in there. They'd eat so darn much of it that they couldn't even get out. We had to take them out. That's the way. But there were seagulls. They'd be looking out over the edge of the boat and watch the lifter, the nets were coming in, you know, waiting to get it. So we'd throw them a hand out. But the summer fishing was real nice, real good, but it didn't last long after when I started. Well, when we had pollution, then we had the amperage. Years ago, they didn't have that, see? Just like when my granddad was fishing, they never had that. They had the mud puppies.
Did the mud puppies bother the fish nets?
No, the only thing they bothered when they got in the twine, they got tangled in there, and they were awful hard getting out, and they were awful slimy, you know. They were awful hard to hold to get them out. And the seagulls, they wouldn't even eat them.
What, did you do anything to try to halt the pollution?
Yes, we went to Green Bay the first time with some of the neighbors, and we tried to find out what we should do. We knew the pollution was coming from out of the Fox River Valley, because there was fish on the beach, 8-10 inches dead fish all along the shores, and the water wasn't clear. You could smell it. You know, as further as you went up going into Green Bay, you could smell it.
How did you try to find that out? What did you do when you got to Green Bay?
Well, we inquired. We went up to see the other fishermen, and then from one another, and then we went up and tried to see if we could get anywhere. We couldn't get no action in Green Bay, so we went to Madison. And they laughed at us.
Who did you talk to in Madison?
The captain. We went to the captain and inquired.
So did a bunch of you go down together? How did that work?
Yeah, there was three of us going. And said, we can't do nothing. They wouldn't even recognize us. Just as though we were dummies. But I wish the day of today that them same guys would be drinking some of that water, that they'd have to drink it.
What effect did the pollution have on the fishing, other than it made your nets slimy and
well, your fish can't live in it. And if they are of any length of time, you can even taste it in the fish if you fry them. It's too strong. There's too much different chemicals.
What did it take to finally do something about the pollution?
Well, I don't know. It just kept going that we just, most of the fishermen all did quit fishing. There was only a few out in the Lake Michigan, Lake Superior, and them bigger bodies of water. But the Green Bay, well, everybody quit.
So the fishermen up in the Door County area of Green Bay and the fishermen from around Green Bay, like
Green Bay,
Peterson's and
Swamico and all them places, they were the same position as we was,
and
even worse.
Did you ever get together, all of you?
Oh, sure we got together. But what are you going to do?
How did you get together? Did you have an organization, or did you have...
Well, whenever we'd meet, then we'd say, well, let's, you know, and then we'd ask if we wanted to get a meeting, but there was nothing we could do. They wouldn't listen to us. Look how many years they went through. And now they're trying to purify that water. And who's paying for it? The taxpayers. Which it shouldn't have been. It should have been your big paper mills and all your... Well, I remember when I was a younger man, and we'll go across that Fox River Valley up there, what you call Muskrat River. Well, that's the East River. You got to hold your nose to cross it. It was just terrible.
Did the fishermen meet in taverns, or was there a place you could get together?
Oh, sure. we'd meet in Travers. Meet in fish houses, a lot of places there. We sell, mostly sold a lot of fish to Schilling and Johnson and all them places.
In Green Bay.
Mm-hmm. And some of them went to Pensacola, Swamapoa, different places, whoever. That didn't make too much difference. But no, they wouldn't do nothing. Now, I always said it, we all said it, that someday we're just going to get it, that we're going to have no fish. We haven't got no more fish. We haven't got the same fish we used to have, excepting in our perch, our walleyes, northerns. We haven't got no more herring. We haven't got no more trout like we had years ago. They're gone. Our whitefish is still here, but they do not taste the same.
Weren't some of those areas overfished? Do you think that had anything to do with it?
Well, I suppose it was, because later in my days, they started using what they call these deep subs. That's something like a pondette, but they're real deep. And them thing, you know, sure cleans out a bunch of fish. They're just about the same as what they're doing today with them 100 mesh whitefish nets, see? You can imagine. They're trying to make a lot of money, trying to make a living out of it, and they're cleaning out the fish, too.
You've been telling us quite a lot about the gill nets. I think you mentioned a hook
net. Yeah, the hook nets.
Can you tell us a little bit about what fishing with those were like and how you made the hoops? And
well, the hoops, we always, at my time, when my granddad, well, they never fished them. But at my time, they just sawed a one by one of hardwood, like a oak or hickory or something. And we steamed them, couldn't hardly, made a hook. It was a 4 foot or 5 foot, it had to be that length in order to turn it to make it round, see. And then we nailed it and tied it, or used seaming twine around it, because it was all tar twine. And we had much bigger floats and bigger sinkers. Send out a lead, same as a pond net. But sometimes we'd put one fight net on one end and one on the other. We'd set two. See what I mean? So the fish would travel back and forth. They'd either go in one or the other. But then if you set too close to shore, we'd only use one. Until they passed the law that we couldn't set within a quarter of a mile.
What kind of fish did you get in those nets?
Everything. Northerns, black bass. I seen them things so full of black bass. Smallmouth bass. That's pitiful. 5-6 pounders.
Did you sell those too?
No.
What did you do?
We never did this. We turned them in, we just kept enough to eat. But the O'Connell guys used to come over here in our reefs, and I know they were taking them. That I know, because they got caught.
Were they selling them?
Sure, they were shipped them out.
Was that illegal?
Yeah, mm-hmm. they weren't allowed to take them whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Not in nets, they were sport fish, that's what they were. Mm.
About what year was that? About what year?
Oh, that must have been about in the 30s, the early 30s, mm-hmm. or probably a little bit before somewhere since. I don't just remember.
Did you each have your own fishing area?
No.
Did your family stay in the same area?
We always lived on a farm all the time. We always kept our boat down in Little Sturgeon. That was quite an arbor years ago there. Mm-hmm.
Would you tell us a little bit about Little Sturgeon? Tell us what it was like then, the buildings that were there, what kind of industry was there?
Oh, years ago, that was the heart of Sturgeon Bay. That was the biggest place of all, where all the boats came in. All the boats that were hauling lumber and grain and everything, and they had big warehouses, they had big store there. Why, it was, that's where Sturgeon Bay really was, but it always went by the name of Little Sturgeon. And it was on this side of the Riley's Point, see? That's where the deeper water, and it came back inside the inland water.
Who were some, you said there was a big store there. Who ran the store?
I don't know who ran the store, but I know at a time that I was up there, that I can remember, it belonged to Gustavusson's. And the old man, and then the boys took it over, Clarence. I don't know if Clarence is dead now or not. He's about my age, but his wife is dead, that I know. But there's nothing there no more. That water and the waves tore everything out, and the docks was all torn out. It's a dirty shame. I wish it was there.
Why did it die?
Hmm?
Why did it not survive?
Well, nobody took care of it. There was nothing there to upkeep it, see?
Did the canal through, you know, from Michigan over into Green Bay, did that make a difference in what happened to Little Sturgeon?
Yeah, the canal that they dug out Sturgeon Bay.
Yeah.
See, the boats started going through there, and then they start. And then the railroad came into Sturgeon Bay, so Little Sturgeon didn't have nothing. See, years ago, they had what they called an old stage road. That's after my dad, and even my granddad. They built from Little Sturgeon all the way to Green Bay, and into Bay Settlement, all the way along the shore.
A stage road.
Yeah, that's what there was, the main road to Green Bay. Just like we'd say today, 57 is our main highway there. That's the way it
was. And this went into Little Sturgeon?
That went into Little Sturgeon. I could show you a lot of that old road. Mm-hmm. Now you take a Sugar Creek down there. They used to have a doctor. There's a lot of them places along the shore. They had places where the doctor and the boats would stop in there. And they'd haul stuff in there.
What would they haul?
Grain, lumber, a lot of stuff that way.
And then what did they take away from there?
Well, they'd haul fish back and whatever there was.
Limestone?
Lime, oh yeah, they had a lot of lime years ago, a lot of lime kilns.
Oh. Are there lime kilns, or were there lime kilns right around Little Sturgeon?
Oh yes.
Were any of the Belgian people involved in any of the? Did you know any Belgians who had a lime kiln?
No, not that I know. But I suppose there was, most likely.
And the shingles, by the time you were young, the shingles were all over with, or were they still making shingles?
They were still making some shingles.
They were. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were splitting the shingles, and then they started making them with machinery as they got along. It's done like the same as it is here, they get things more modern. But I was up there last Sunday. I went up and looked at it up there, but it's not the same place. Mm-hmm. It's just a great big summer resort, that's all it is today.
Did the summer resort business have any effect on the fishing and
in
the way of life as far as the Belgian farmers and that were concerned?
No, they never affected us. The only thing they done, if you had property along the shore and you had a nice spot and you And you had cattle in it. They wanted to go in there on a weekend and camp and have a nice place to spend the day or a picnic. Mm-hmm. And then they let your gates open, your cattle get out. And that's why we sold the property we had at Sugar Creek.
It was a nuisance?
Yes, it was a nuisance. Sometimes we'd go and get our cattle way on the other side of Newmore. By the time we knew our cattle were out of there, why, they kept traveling. They'd even shoot the locks after we put locks on. You just couldn't do nothing. People want that, go in there. It was not private them years. They didn't care for anything. But there, I can go and show you where the dock was yet, too.
At Sugar Creek?
Yeah.
How about Shudor's dock? What was that like?
Well, that was another place that they'd stop in. That was a bigger dock there than they had at Sugar Creek. See, that's when they first chartered them. Boats would charter stuff from Green Bay, fruit and vegetables, and not vegetables so much, but flour and all stuff that way, because they had the only place they had for a grist mill at that time was at Green Bay, up there at, it was on the other side of Bay Settlement, just before you hit University Avenue, just on that left-hand side coming out. I remember where the mill was.
But they would take boats to get to the mill?
Hmm?
Would they come through the water? To get to
the mill? No,
this was by land.
They had hauled by land after they got to Green Bay, but then they'd haul it back to the boats and...
And then bring the flour back bring
the flour back in, sure.
Up to Shudor's dock, mm-hmm. then. Now, that was a Belgian... That was run by Belgian people, wasn't it?
And a lot of the Belgian, a lot of them even got... Even today, I know some of them's got a rock where they used to grind their wheat.
Rather than go to Green Bay.
Mm-hmm. And years ago, my grandpa told me, he says, the only place we could go was at Bay Settlement. That was the closest place for them to go.
Who built the dock by Sugar Creek? Do you know?
That was before my time. Mm-hmm. That was back in my great-granddad's times. They built a lot of them. A lot of boats come along. They wouldn't get too far offshore because it was all sailboats. And when they've gotten the storm, well, they had trying to get where they could protect themselves. And I know my dad told me that they run on the reef sometimes, and then they had to dump their stuff overboard in order to get the weight off to get their boat back in deep water. And they'd go in there with rowboats, with small boats, and get the grain for nothing. They had and help them try to get off there. Well, they had a hard time. There's no question about it. But as far as fish, that's all they want to eat.
What did a lot of the people end up doing that stopped fishing then?
Well, what are you going to do? If there's nothing in it, you go to something else.
Did they go to the shipyards in Sturgeon Bay? Or?
Yeah, I worked the shipyards in Sturgeon Bay. I worked the shipyards in Mandeville. Mm-hmm. And then later on, back in the 40s, I sold. Sold the place, sold everything out. Then I went to Chicago Millionaire.
Could you explain a few more of these things to me?
What do you
and how
know?
I'd like to know how you made them, or how you would have made them back at the time you would have used these with your fishing.
Well, you just
what materials, you know, where
you what tools? What they mostly used to make them out of.
What is that?
Yeah.
That's a shuttle. Mm-hmm. That's what I call a shuttle. No matter what size they are. Mm-hmm. The small ones are mostly for mending small twine, see? Like the fine twine. Mm-hmm. What they mostly used to take is a piece of white ash. Mm-hmm. because it's a straight grain wood. See, when you want to cut it out, it always cuts even.
And was there ash around in this area?
Oh yes, a lot of ash up here, an awful lot of it. And then they just keep carving it out, cutting it down, making it thin, and shaping it up. And they're just like the ones they're making today. That's where they copied off the ones they got today. They made the aluminum ones after they got the wooden ones. Now they got the plastic one, just like that one right there. See.
But you never used shuttles that you had, say, your mother would use for sewing.
Oh yeah, my mother made shuttles.
She made them.
Oh yes, my sister's got one of those that she made.
Did she make yours for fishing, or did she make ones for herself in the house?
Well, she just made one for herself. Mm-hmm. She wanted to run stuff through, which they're handy to have, far as that goes.
Okay, and how about these? Well, these are what?
Well, this year's after they quit making these sinkers.
These are which sinkers? The lead?
Now, that's the sinker they made after the stone.
Okay, the stone, and then maybe we'll go to this one next. The stone, yeah. And then after that came...
Then this.
And what's this made out of?
Cement.
Yeah.
Cement.
How did they make those at the time?
A piece of pipe or anything round. Pour them in, then put a wooden peg in them. When the peg dries out, you can drive it out. Just like a doll, you know. Something that's halfway uniform. Or even... You take they had a steel rod, and they grease it good, and they put it in there, they pour the cement around it. But our piece of wood was the best, because when it's wet, it expands, see? When it dries out, it loosens up, and you can pull them out or drive them out.
I think when I was here before, you told me something about the problems that you had with these.
Well, they had problems with these because when they first started, they started tying them on just like they tied the corks, the wooden corks on, see? To run a seaming twine through, and they used that thing to pull them through that I got in there. And they... Then they tied.
They used the wire, the piece of wire to pull through.
Yeah, just a piece of wire with a hook. They pushed that through, then they had a loop on the double loop, and they pulled it there and they tied. It was just on the top or on the bottom, just like the cork, same thing. But that kept wearing off, too. See, that's rough. See, start cutting the twine, well, then they'd lose them. So then... They went to lead.
And when did they go to lead? I mean, how could they make that
change? They went. They had lead when I started already.
Did you buy those, or did you pour the lead yourself?
We poured some ourselves. Yeah, any scrap lead that we could pick, we got a mold made, and we pour them. A ladle and everything, and just put them in, and then all you gotta do is just flip them, and they'd open up and pull the pin out.
You heated the lead into
heat it into a liquid form, and you just had a little hole, or I'd say maybe an eighth of an inch or a little bit bigger, flared on one end, drilled out bigger with a drill, you know, so make kind of a little puddle, and we'd pour it in there. But we had to be awful careful we didn't have water or stuff, otherwise it would splash and hit you in the face and burn you.
What time of the year did you make those?
At any time we needed them, and we had spare lead.
Where would the spare lead come from?
Well, you could buy sheet lead. They used to use some of that for on your water lines years ago. That's all they want. When they connect their main to the inch and a quarter, and it was made out of lead. Mm. And you could pick it up sometimes for a little nothing. But then we started making them like this.
And how is this made?
How is this made? With a mold.
That's the lead.
Yeah, but see how rough it is? It's been banged, and that's just from pulling and sliding on the bottom. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's some made them heavier and some made them smaller. This one here you can see is made with a mold. See that line in there? And turn that light on, right back here. There's a line there, well that's where the mold opened up, see.
Did your mother help you make these?
No, no. No, mother was never helped me mold any lead. We all made all our stuff, and our floats the same way.
The floats, are those little kind of egg-shaped things that are on that net that you got us?
Mm-hmm.
You told me something about those too. Did you make those?
Yeah, we did run them into a lathe. See, a piece of whatever length they're laid to us, they'd cut them and they'd run them in.
Who's they?
Hmm?
Who did that?
Well, anybody that had a lathe.
Were they neighbors or someone in
sure,
Green Bay?
Sure, neighbors, that's all. They done that for a living, charge us a few cents apiece for them.
How did you care for those? I think you told me that you had to give those exceptionally good care.
Oh, sure. We had to use them with rolled in seed oil. Treat them sometimes as high as 3 coats and leave them dry. And then they'd go sometimes, like if you only fish winters, you could probably fish 3 winters with them. Then some wood would take the oil better than others, and they'd look just like a varnished floor.
I think we're at the end of...